Alors, nous allons écouter maintenant Gaia Cotino de La Sapienza, Weighing Bodies in the South Pacific, the BMI Index in the Kingdom of Tonga.
Of Tonga. Okay, so good morning, everybody. Can you hear me well? I added a little subtitle to my paper, Critical Notes on the Right Body Size, because that's something I'd really like to discuss. I put some pictures because I think they give a better idea of the context for those who are not familiar with the South Pacific. So during the past decade, the obesity issue has been, as we have heard this morning, under the spotlight of diverse, of different international organizations. And according to the 2000 WHO report on obesity, entitled Too Big to Ignore, the most worrying area of the world is Oceania. Since the six countries with the highest body mass index are all located in the Pacific, gaining such news headlines as Pacific Islanders are the world's fattest or eating themselves to death. Among these Pacific Island countries, the Kingdom of Tonga occupies the fifth position with about 90% of an obese rate among females and 48% among males. So this morning, relying on my fieldwork in the Kingdom of Tonga, I show how inadequate is the official WHO standpoint on fatness and health, based on mainstream measurements of body weight, which rely on a very disputable assumption, namely there is a universal standard measure. I will also give a brief description of the Tongan cultural practices related to beauty and body size ideals, social certification as well, and I try to challenge the conclusions. Moreover, I pay attention, just giving a few examples, to the national and international public health policies around the obesity issue, concluding that the role they play in building health problems might weigh more than local cultural practices. So obesity became only recently a disease and was a decision, I don't know if all of you know, taken in 2004 when the American Obesity Association pushed for including in the Center for Disease Control disease agenda obesity, with the result that today it has a status of disease and for this reason is treatable with drugs. Two Italian epidemiologists, Paolo Vinis and Roberto Satolli, addressed the responsibility for a world becoming sicker earlier, address such responsibility to a biomedical science which builds, categorizes, and names certain phenomenal or critical conditions, which is what they call a social construction of reality. It is a construction based on the illusion that the world can be dichotomized either in sick or healthy, and as they say, where boundaries between sick and healthy are set depends on the biomedical paradigms in a specific historical moment. The big Polynesian bodies became sick because the optimal size and the right body do not correspond anymore. Now that there is only one standardized and universal optimal size. Medical science is therefore inexact and composed of many fuzziness zones, meaning that both external and internal factors of different origin influence the states of sickness, well-being, and risk. As Mike Nichter reminds us, health has obviously today a global dimension because the strategies, policies, and fundings are global, and we certainly cannot omit such dimension from our engagement with health structures. So in the contemporary globalized world, indeed, the Western alarm concerning body weight has reached faraway areas, as I just said before, no less so than in the Pacific area. So the dramatization of these populations' body size fits poorly into the picture that we have inherited from the various explorers from the 17th century on. And what they described, despite different personal tastes, was quite surprisingly big, tall, and muscular people. It would seem from this that a past which saw nature as shaping slim and healthy bodies was and still is a romantic cultural construction. Yet today, these bodies, once a matter of admiring amazement, are considered ill. A constructed epidemic of obesity has brought about a pan-Pacific health problem in which big sizes have been medicalized. So let me now further disclaim through two related topics: the mainstream measurements of body size, the BMI that has already been addressed, and the Polynesian different ideals and preferred body size and beauty. The Kingdom of Tonga is a quite large archipelago with a population of about 100,000 people, where the average age is 23, and is, according to the 2000 WHO report, the fifth country, as I said, worldwide with the highest percentage of obese people. Because of these high percentages, I was prepared to find in Tonga a quite critical situation. Instead, I found myself in an environment of people, big built, tall and muscular, again, only few of which were visibly obese. So where did this epidemic of obesity responsible for a Pacific obesity epidemics came from? Which were the parameters used to measure it? And my first criticism concerns the mainstream measurement used to universally calculate the body mass, which is the body mass index. Which is a simple index which commonly divides in underweight, normal weight, overweight, and obesity. This index, which has been also just recently criticized even within the biomedical system with an article that at the end of August just came out on the journal Science, does not take in consideration the proportion of body fat, lean muscle, bone density, fat distribution, and bulkiness. And these are, and these are distinctive elements to be taken into consideration when measuring a body, whether it is European or Polynesian. A committee of specialists appointed by the WHO has raised the obesity threshold for the Pacific Islanders specifically from 30 to 32, certainly including the risk of racial separation, but at the same time recognizing that Polynesian populations are generally big built. Nevertheless, such revised index forgets again to take in consideration those elements that I just mentioned before. As to Tonga, few quantitative researches on the obesity issue have been done in the past 30 years, all of them employing the standard BMI index. However, most of them have been based on non-comparable, non-representative samples, so difference in terms of geographical areas, size of the sample, gender distribution makes it really impossible to generalize from the data that I could collect. Furthermore, overweight and obesity are used interchangeably, ignoring the difference in terms of pathological risk. Moreover, measurements often don't differentiate between different levels of obesity, so once over the threshold of 30, the person would be simply labeled as obese. Thus, even if the most of the local structure have not adjusted yet to the new parameters, it would be impossible to calculate how many people have a BMI between 30 and 32 and are not considered obese anymore. So I have to say that local health workers are quite skeptical about the BMI, but they also find themselves in the difficult position of being part of a biomedical system which has its mainstream measurements. As I will explain you in a second, the parameters of beauty that are locally perceived. What's the reaction of the common population? I just mentioned two reactions. And the first person said, one of them said, "I always look at this BMI thing and I think it's impossible to lose that much weight. I would disappear. They say my ideal weight should be 87 and I go, oh my God, have you ever seen me at 90? Everybody asked me what was wrong with me." And this other person says, "The BMI doesn't make sense with me and all the Polynesian people. I'm big because I play rugby all my life and now I'm obese," according to them. It is true that athletes have usually high BMIs and definitely are not fat. It is not a surprise to read in the introductory notes of the last Tongan National Nutritional Survey that it was, I'm quoting, it is difficult to take skinfold the measurement, in particular in man, for whom the good muscle development made it impossible the measurement. For this reason, such data have been excluded from the analysis. This consideration introduced the second topic, namely, which is the role played by the cultural and social aspects of body size, not unexpectedly defined as barriers to well-being, even by Nishida in 2010 at the Pacific Food Summit. He wrote to inform people on the risk does not affect their eating behaviors if we don't contrast also the social, cultural, environmental, psychological, and economical barriers. In Tonga, many local cultural practices enhance abundance. For example, carrying around a big body as well as exposing a big pile of root crops shows how the power of a family. So there are many questions that came out. Are Tongans bigger than in the past? Who embodies the ideal body type? And what are the definitions of beauty and ideal body sizes across generations? And how does the population react to the obesity epidemic alarm and to the WHO projects? And how does the skinny Western notion of beauty influence the new generation image? I could probably talk all day, but I have 20 minutes. So according to my observation, I can say that big people are not stigmatized, but skinny people are often teased because to be skinny, and I'm quoting, means to be poor and not to have enough food, and vice versa, to have meat around the bones means that your family took good care of you. In the past, in fact, the chiefs who embodied the political and economical power, high social status and strength, had bigger body sizes, and such body size became the beauty ideal. So what is observable today is on the one side the resilience of such ideal body size, therefore is not a surprise to be addressed or to receive the compliment, oh, you grew fat, you look chiefly. And on the other side, thanks to a better access to resources, a wide diffusion of big body sizes, which is the epidemic of obesity, according to WHO. So such big sizes are still evident today, certainly among high-status people. They say, for example, nobles or the royal family or priests who needed to have a belly to show their mana, as one interview said. Or the new urban elites, for example. Another interview said, a manager is a big person because back in time, a person who gave orders was big. Nevertheless, bigness seemed no longer to be related to the socioeconomic status. What may have happened, rather than epidemic of obesity, is a democratization of big body sizes. However, the Tongan diaspora and the beauty pageant Miss Heilala, which takes place in the capital every year, brought into the island Western ideal body sizes, and for this reason, what we witness today is a very articulated and complex bodyscape. Indeed, the beauty definitions are quite different among the generations, but interestingly enough, they all recognize and describe the Tongan body at the same way, meaning that I'm trying to cut short here. At the same way, so they would describe the Sinofakatonga, the body at the Tongan style, as big legs, big back, and big thighs, because it's considered the beautiful body to dance the traditional Tongan dances. And instead, the Sinolele, which means beautiful body, is different according to generations. And does not correspond necessarily to the body that is the beautiful body to dance the Tongan dances. These preference, how much is to have conclusion? I'm already out of the 20 minutes.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. So. I think I will just skip. I just want to say that I think that these preferences do not reflect the adjustment to the optimal size set by the WHO. And that this complex bodyscape is intertwined with an equally complex foodscape. And even if the Tongan diet is differently from other Pacific Island countries based on root crops, it is true that imported processed food are heavily consumed and have hybridized the local diet with negative consequences on the population's health, and therefore the big body size is addressed as the main responsible for non-communicable diseases instead of looking at the food policies and health policies that are taking place in the kingdom. And therefore, I'll just go to the end. I will just shortly mention one health policy that WHO is carrying out in the Kingdom of Tonga, which is weight loss competitions, giving money for to the people who lose more weight in the offices, and obviously people would participate to win the money and throw a big feast and redistribute the resources instead of dieting, because that's certainly not the objective. So in conclusion, I believe that while ethnography can study and describe the diversity of each context, anthropology, autoreflexivity provides a lens through which to observe not only a West, which is quite dominated with the obsession of weight control, but its effect on the whole world. So I really feel the necessity to integrate what we talked about yesterday, the local biology, with the study of material conditions, social relation in the development of certain pathologies, and lastly, identifying the socioeconomical and structural factors which predispose directly or indirectly populations to certain pathologies. Thank you.
Merci beaucoup, Gaia.
Sorry for being long. I calculated the time, but probably it wasn't enough.
Mais votre papier était de toute façon plein de tant de choses, il était difficile de le faire tenir dans le temps. D'autant plus que vous soulevez vraiment deux questions très intéressantes derrière la question centrale dont on n'a pas parlé, ce qui est la reconnaissance de l'OMS de l'obésité comme pathologique pour des raisons cardiovasculaires, rhumatismales, etc., etc. Vous soulevez deux questions. La question scientifique. Une meilleure analyse de ce qu'est un corps, graisse, muscles et os, qui est complètement ouverte. Et la deuxième question, évidemment, plus connue, de l'esthétique et de la symbolique des formes, et en particulier en termes de pouvoir et d'attrait sexuel. Il y avait des pages très bonnes de Lévi-Strauss dans Triste Tropique à ce sujet. Et finalement, ces questions esthétiques, sexuelles et politiques font partie du bien-être. Et là, on voit bien comment il y a un paradoxe au sein même de la définition de l'obésité comme un phénomène pathologique.
Oui, c'est ça. Merci.
Alors, nous allons écouter maintenant notre dernière intervenante, Emilia Sanabria, qui va parler de Uncertain Evidence, Scales, Bodies and Environments in Obesity Science.
Merci.